This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The revolving door between government and the defense industry has raised many questions about conflict of interest and special access. Such questions have been raised about the Carlyle Group, a private equity firm which buys and sells companies from around the world. The Carlyle Group is heavily invested in the defense and aerospace industries, and it's well connected to the Bush administration. For example, former President George H.W. Bush is a paid advisor to the company. My guest Dan Brighty has written a new book called The Iron Triangle, Inside the Secret World of the Carlyle Group. The Iron Triangle is an expression for the intersection of politics, big business, and the military. Dan Brighty is a business journalist who has written for Forbes, Wired, and Red Herring. A little later, we'll hear from a spokesperson for the Carlyle Group. I asked journalist Dan Brighty to explain what the Carlyle Group does.
Well, the best way to explain the Carlyle Group is to use a euphemism that Dwight Eisenhower employed back in the 1960s when he was leaving office. He warned the country against the formation of something called the military-industrial complex. And that is probably the best way to describe what the Carlyle Group does. They are a very large $15.8 billion private equity firm that invests in heavily government-regulated industries like defense, like aerospace, healthcare, telecommunications. And the way that they do this is they employ a number of ex-politicians, very prominent ex-politicians, like George Bush Sr., James Baker III, Frank Carlucci, a former Secretary of Defense under Reagan, John Major, former UK Prime Minister. And they use these guys to help them build their portfolios, bring in investments from around the world, and then also to scour the investment landscape, in particularly these government-regulated industries, to help them make better decisions.
There's a couple of firsts that the Carlyle Group represents. It's the first time a former president has worked on behalf of a defense contractor.
Yeah, and I think that this is the most important point about the Carlyle Group. There are a number of conflicts of interest that arise when you have this many politicians and ex-politicians on board who are going sort of in and out of administrations. But the most important one that needs to be pointed out is the fact that George Bush Sr. is working for this company, which is the 11th largest defense contractor in the country. At the same time, his son is in office and waging war against Iraq and against terrorism. This is a very clear conflict of interest, and there have been groups in Washington, public interest groups, some very conservative in nature, who have called for the resignation of George Bush Sr. because they feel that it undermines the credibility of his son in office.
Now, there is the appearance of a conflict, but has there actually ever been a conflict of interest posed by the fact that George Bush Sr. is affiliated with the Carlyle Group while his son is president of the United States?
Well, there's a semantical issue here. There's clearly a conflict of interest. Whether that conflict has resulted in the influence of a decision on behalf of George W. Bush or anyone else, Donald Rumsfeld, who's very close with Frank Carlucci, it's not clear whether this kind of influence peddling is effective or not. There have been examples of times that have been widely reported in the press where George Bush Sr. has advised his son while in office on foreign policy decisions, both in Saudi Arabia and South Korea. The Carlyle Group has extensive investments in both South Korea and Saudi Arabia. And so when you start to see a pattern like that, you raise the red flag, but taking the next step into, you know, whether decisions were made in a corrupt fashion is a very large leap to make and very difficult to prove.
You say the scandal here isn't what's illegal. Nothing illegal has necessarily gone on here. You say the scandal is what's legal. What do you mean by that?
Well, we're starting to see this more and more now, especially with the procurement process that's going on for the rebuilding of Iraq. There is an accepted way of doing business in Washington, D.C., hiring these former politicians, having them on the board of companies of which they have no experience in those industries has become somewhat of an accepted practice. And like I said, there is very little regulation and almost no legislation that is keeping these people in check. So this is something that goes on relatively overlooked by any sort of legal standards.
Now, what does George Bush Sr., the former president, do with the Carlyle Group?
Well, he does a couple things. The first thing he does is give speeches around the world. So he's been known to travel all throughout Asia, to Kuwait, to Saudi Arabia, give speeches, pack the house with very wealthy individuals in order to extract their money and put it into funds for the Carlyle Group. But he also meets with business leaders around the world. He meets with political leaders. And these are much more direct business practices that he is involved with the Carlyle Group.
Now, George W. Bush, our current president, was once affiliated with the Carlyle Group. What was his relationship to Carlyle?
George W. Bush was appointed as onto the board of a company called Cater Air, which is a now defunct company which did airline catering back in the early 90s. And he was on that board for about 4 years. Cater Air was an incredibly unsuccessful investment for Carlyle. They lost hundreds of millions of dollars on that investment. And George W. Bush actually ended up being pretty heavily criticized for his role in that company during his gubernatorial campaign in Texas in 1994.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Dan Brayaty. He's the author of the new book, The Iron Triangle, Inside the Secret World of the Carlyle Group. Now, Frank Carlucci was the chairman of Carlyle. He's now chairman emeritus.
That's correct.
One of the questions that's been raised about Frank Carlucci, who is, well, let's start with what his credentials are.
Frank Carlucci has been in just about every position of public servancy in the United States government imaginable. He was Secretary of Defense. He was Deputy Director of the CIA. He served in various capacities as foreign ambassadors during the 70s. And his pedigree is extensive in federal government.
Okay, so one of the questions that was raised about him is, does he have special access to Secretary of State Donald Rumsfeld? Because they were good friends in college. They wrestled together. I guess they were on the same wrestling team. Do I have that right?
Yes, that's right.
They were roommates?
Frank Carlucci and Don Rumsfeld went to Princeton University together. They were roommates, and they were on the wrestling team together. And they are very good friends. So the obvious thing to infer there is whether Frank Carlucci, as the chairman of a very large defense contractor, has any sway with Donald Rumsfeld as Secretary of Defense. And the best we were able to do in turning up any evidence of that were some letters that that Frank Carlucci sent to Donald Rumsfeld lobbying for various policy changes in the Pentagon and even sending some letters to Secretary of State Colin Powell lobbying for some foreign affairs changes to take place, which is exactly the kind of thing that blurs the boundary between a private citizen working in the private sector and someone who has been a career politician. It's very difficult to tell where those two things leave off.
Okay, so it's maybe easier to get a letter to Donald Rumsfeld if you're his old college buddy. On the other hand, if we look at the latest development in this, there's a weapon system that one of the Carlyle-owned companies, United Defense, was developing. It's called the Crusader, and it was this very contemporary howitzer, the most powerful howitzer or cannon that would have ever been made. Donald Rumsfeld was one of the people who wanted to kill the Crusader, even though, you know, Frank Carlucci and Carlyle wanted to see this built. And in fact, it was finally killed. And in fact, Donald Rumsfeld fired, or at least just accepted the resignation of the Secretary of the Army, Thomas White, who was an advocate of building this Crusader.
Right.
So this would argue that, well, that influence really doesn't go very far, does it?
That's right. It does, on the surface, it does appear that way, and there certainly were a lot of shenanigans that went on behind the saga of the Crusader and of United Defense. But it's important to point out in this whole story that United Defense made Carlyle a lot of money shortly after September 11th. They were able to take the company public. They made $237 million in one day in that IPO. This was just after Congress passed the new defense budget in December of 2001. So United Defense was able to go public despite the fact that the Crusader had been on the chopping block for years and years before that, well into the Clinton administration as well. This gun had survived successive rounds of budget cuts miraculously over time. And then also another important thing is to remember is that though Donald Rumsfeld did kill the Crusader program in a very public announcement and made a very big show of that, there was a new gun contract awarded to United Defense the very same day that the program was canceled. That was not as big of a press announcement.
The story that helped make the Carlyle Group the subject of a lot of speculation was the fact that the Bin Laden family was involved with the Carlyle Group, and this came to a lot of public attention after September 11th, when the name of Bin Laden started to really register in the minds of many Americans. And George Bush Sr. Was involved with Carlyle Group at the same time the Bin Laden family was. What was the connection of the Bin Laden family to the Carlyle Group?
Well, the Bin Laden family is an investor in the, or was an investor, I should say, in the Carlyle Group. They were an investor in a fund called Carlyle Partners II, which is one of the largest defense funds for Carlyle. And the irony of that whole situation that emerged after September 11th was that the Bin Laden family stood to gain financially, because they were invested in this defense fund, from the war that was being waged essentially against their son Osama. So it was a tragic irony, and the Carlyle Group picked up on it right away and divested themselves from the family.
So the Bin Laden family is no longer affiliated with the Carlyle Group?
That's correct.
And the Bin Laden family said that they were no longer in contact with their son Osama at the time that they were involved with the Carlyle Group.
That's right. They've disavowed Osama back in the early 90s.
At the very least, it certainly seemed ironic that at the same time that George Bush Sr. and the Bin Laden family were involved with the Carlyle Group, that George Bush's son, George W. Bush, President of the United States, was declaring war against Osama bin Laden.
Yeah, it was terribly ironic, and after the press picked up on it, it was something that the Carlyle Group couldn't bear anymore, and they obviously had to take some action, and they did. But in some ways, you know, this is a coincidence. It's a small world when you're talking about international finance and people who have the kind of money that can invest in a company like Carlyle. We're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars just to get in the door for a company like this. So. And I think that some of the conspiracy theories that sprouted around this relationship between the Bushes and the Bin Ladens serves to undermine what's really important about this story, which is the revolving door between politics and business, a practice that has become generally accepted in this country and entirely unregulated. That's, I think, the important story here, not these connections between the shocking names of the folks in the Middle East.
How did the Carlyle Group get started?
They got started back in 1987 as a leverage buyout firm, which was the big thing to do back in the late 80s. Their first deal was something called the Great Eskimo Tax Scam. That's how it was known within the office. Essentially, what the company was doing was shuttling money between Eskimo-owned companies who were losing money, selling those losses to profitable companies in the United States as a tax shelter, and they were brokering these transactions for a cut of the fee.
So this was taking advantage of a tax loophole that was written for Eskimo businesses?
That's right. They pushed billions of dollars through this tax loophole and ultimately cost the federal government quite a big chunk of change in tax money, and also made themselves between $10 and $20 million in the process.
Who founded the company?
The company was founded by two guys. One is David Rubenstein, who was an aide in the Carter administration, a very young aide. He was 27 years old at the time, and at the time he was also known as one of the most dedicated public servants around. The other guy was Stephen Norris, who was a tax genius over at Marriott Corp. And the two of them got together literally to do this tax loophole and to make some money off of it. And after they found that they were making so much money, they decided to incorporate.
Now, you said that the Carlyle Group specialized in leveraged buyouts when they got started. Explain what a leveraged buyout is.
Sure. A leveraged buyout is essentially when a company borrows money from wealthy individuals and takes that money and invests it for them in the practice of buying out a company. So it works much in the same way that a mutual fund works. When you hand your money over to a mutual fund advisor and then that advisor then goes and buys stocks on behalf of you, this works the same way, except they're buying entire companies, usually privately held companies, instead of buying stocks with your money. And it's open to only the very, very wealthiest of people. Most of these funds have a minimum of $1 million, usually much more, in order to even get in.
And with a company like the Carlyle Group, sometimes after buying a company, once the company becomes profitable, it'll sell the company.
That's right. So the idea is to turn the company around for a profit. And you could do this a number of ways. One, you can break it up and sell it off for parts, which is one of the nastier ways of doing business in the LBO business. Or you can help that company to turn their business around and then sell them 2, 3, 5 years later at a severe profit, and that's what Carlyle specializes in.
How do Carlyle start to buy up defense companies, defense-oriented companies?
Well, in 1989, they hired a guy by the name of Frank Carlucci, who was the Secretary of Defense under Reagan. He was coming out of that administration, and he had spent most of his time as Secretary of Defense revamping the procurement process around the Pentagon. Now, this came in handy now that he was in the private sector and working for a financial institution, because he directed the Carlyle Group into the defense buyout business. So he started identifying defense companies that were down on their luck, of which there were many because the Cold War had just ended in 1989. So he was able to direct the company into buying a lot of devalued defense properties and then spruce them up and turn them around. And by the time that the Gulf War came about in the early 90s, those property values skyrocketed again, and Carlyle did very well.
So some of those properties had lost money because of the end of the Cold War, when people were when our country was demilitarizing, and then they became more profitable during the Gulf War.
That's exactly right. These things work in cycles, so you have to time it perfectly, and they did that in that case.
What's one of the defense companies that the Carlyle Group bought that turned into one of its most lucrative investments?
Well, two companies really stand out in that regard. The first is BDM, which is a defense consultancy that is now owned by TRW, which is one of our largest defense contractors here in the United States. BDM was a company that the Carlyle Group bought early on, and for a very, very cheap and deflated price, because it was in that fallow period between the end of the Cold War and the beginning of the Gulf War. And they got a great price on it. Defense values started to skyrocket again in the early 90s, and BDM, I think they turned something like a 300 or 400% profit on that company. The other company that stands out is United Defense, which we've talked about already, and that's a company that makes the Bradley fighting vehicles and the Paladin gun systems that we've seen on TV so much during the war in Iraq. And this company made Carlyle hundreds of millions of dollars in a very short amount of time after they were able to take it public after September 11th.
Does Carlyle still own United Defense?
They own stock in United Defense. United Defense is now a public company, so it's publicly held by shareholders.
Are there companies that lost a lot of money for the Carlyle Group?
Yeah, they've had, especially in the beginning, they had a lot of flops. They were trying to get their feet on the ground, and they weren't sure what kind of business they were going to go into. And before Frank Carlucci came on board and directed them towards defense, they tried to buy some restaurant chains, they tried to buy some real estate companies, and many of those were failures.
Although the Carlyle Group has a much higher profile now than it did before September 11th, and although there are even a lot of like conspiracy theories floating around about the Carlyle Group, it seems to actually be heading in a more mainstream direction now. I mean, maybe moving away from the defense industry, moving away even from government connections. The new chairman is the former head of IBM.
Yeah, the new chairman is Lou Gerstner, former CEO of IBM, And Lou has pledged to give 20% of his time to Carlyle Group. I'm not sure how he'll divvy that up, but that's what the press release says. And yeah, you're right. They have diversified extensively. They're into everything from healthcare to telecommunications. They own bottling companies. They own media properties. They own just about everything. But the defense and aerospace business is still important to them, although they've been trying to downplay that as of late, obviously for fear of bad publicity. But it is still a very important business. It makes up a little less than 15% of their business, and they're certainly not slowing down in that area. They've recently closed on a deal to buy the UK's Ministry of Defense Research Agency, a company called Kinetech. This is akin to DARPA here in the United States. And they've also recently closed on a deal to buy the defense and aerospace assets of Fiat, which is an Italian company.
Having done the research that you did into the Carlyle Group, where do you think conflict of interest access, the revolving door, may have actually come into play the most?
Well, I do think that the relationship between Frank Carlucci and Don Rumsfeld is something that needs to be more closely looked at. And I do think that the relationship, obviously, between George Bush Sr. And his son is something that cannot stand. It is clearly a conflict of interest, and conflicts of interests lead to potential corruption. And so that's why we try to eliminate conflicts of interest in our political system. And that's why Dick Cheney had to sell all of his stock in Halliburton. That's why people need to divest themselves from certain companies. These are family ties. These are close friends. This is a way that America has done business for a long time. We've just never seen the kind of setup that Carlyle has in our history. It's entirely unique.
Yeah, as you say, business has been conducted like this for a long time. You could argue that most fields are really, when it comes to the people at the top, a small world. And in most fields, the people at the top, they know each other. And they're going to have special access to each other because when you get to the top, it's a small world.
That's right. And I think that's okay. That's a way that Americans have done business for a long time. But I do think that when you're talking about some of the people involved being the President of the United States, the Secretary of Defense, the President of the United States' father, then something needs to be done, whether it's a little more regulation, possibly some legislation, but it would make me rest easier if something was done about it.
What kind of regulation has been proposed, if any, that would help regulate that revolving door?
None that I'm aware of. We're starting to see a lot more attention on this issue right now, especially with what's going on with the bidding process for Iraq and Dick Cheney's ties to Halliburton. And I think that's a very positive development. I think people are starting to become aware of just how tight-knit this community has gotten and the access that some of these folks are allowed and how much we've come to accept this way of doing business. So I think the more focus we have on this, the more change is likely to come about.
Did you come across a lot of Carlyle Group-related conspiracy theories when you were researching the group?
Yeah, and some of them came from some surprising sources. There was a congresswoman by the name of Cynthia McKinney, with whom I'm sure many of your listeners are familiar. She levied a claim that George W. Bush actually allowed the events of September 11th to happen because of the advantages that Carlyle Group would gain as a result. Now, this kind of conspiracy theory is irresponsible, it's reckless, and it really undermines what we're trying to accomplish in bringing these conflicts of interest out. These conflicts of interest, the revolving door, it's a much more subtle and insidious problem than these conspiracy theorists would have you believe. Those are outrageous claims, and they tend to make the real issues here easily dismissible.
You know, when it comes to conflict of interest, it's easy to argue that, well, you know, of course people who serve in defense-oriented positions within the United States government are going to be the people who understand the defense industry the best, and likewise people in the defense industry are the people who are most likely to comprehend that industry and do well serving in government in defense-related positions. And in that sense, you know, the revolving door, you could argue, is almost a good thing, because these are the people in the know who know about both sides of that particular fence.
That's right, and I agree with that, which is why I think it's important that we don't take this issue too far. We don't get into the conspiracy theories, and we stay away from that and keep our eye on the ball, so to speak, in terms of making sure that there aren't direct financial connections between decisions that are being made in office and the folks who are benefiting from them in the private sector. Now, there is certainly more subtle legislation that has been written in the past for other kind of situations like this. I don't think it would be difficult to do in this particular area, but your point is well taken. In the case of Halliburton and Kellogg Brown and Root putting out the oil well fires in Iraq, it may very well be that that is the best company to do that job. And just because Dick Cheney used to work for that company does not mean we should not award that contract to Kellogg Brown and Root. So we don't want to get into a situation where we're actually making bad policy decisions because the conflicts of interest are there. We just want to try to mitigate and get rid of the conflicts of interest whenever possible.
Are you personally surprised, and this is just your personal reaction, are you personally surprised that George Bush Sr. has not stepped down and tried to end that particular part of the controversy surrounding the Carlyle Group?
Yeah, I think that's the most troubling single thing about this story for me. It seems to me like George Bush Sr. should have plenty of opportunities in international finance without getting involved in a company that's heavily invested in defense. And certainly it would seem that he would want to resign or recuse himself from any position that threatened the credibility of his son while he was making such an important political decision. And the fact that he has not done that is very surprising to me and frankly very confounding.
Dan Brioti, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Dan Brioti is the author of The Iron Triangle, Inside the Secret World of the Carlyle Group.